The sun has set, the air is cold. Something moves beyond the clearing. A faint whisper, a heavy footstep. Something's getting close. But have no fear, you should be safe. The campfire is going strong. Gather round, but be warned, they come before dawn.
Good evening, dear listeners, and welcome to They Come Before Dawn. I am your host, Lawrence.
And I am your co-host, Ray.
And in this night's episode, we'll be talking about the Dyatlov Pass incident. It's also the same as Dyatlov Pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really curious.
Yeah, you don't know what happened at the Dyatlov Pass. You don't know anything about it.
No, I know it's like where 6 people disappeared or something?
10. No, 9 people.
9 people, okay.
Yeah.
Disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I know.
You don't know what region of the world?
Russia, no?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
Russia.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Dyatlov is a Russian name.
That sounded pretty Russian, so...
Yeah, it is pretty Russian. You don't know anything about when it happened, what happened?
Was it in the 80s?
No.
No, okay.
Okay,
I have no clue.
Incorrect.
No.
No.
You just know
that some...
People disappeared.
Some
and
people
they,
disappeared.
They never
okay.
found them again.
Well, are you interested in the Dyatlov Pass?
I'm always interested in a good mystery.
You want me to tell what happened?
Good mystery, you know what I mean.
Yeah. You want me to tell you what happened at the Dyatlov?
Yes, please do.
Because this episode is, I would say, another one of our special episodes, but all our episodes are special. It's another episode where I did all the research. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Wait, if you say it like that, then it means that I was too lazy to do
research. No. That's not what I mean. It's just, again, as we did with the Somerton Man,
yeah,
I asked
yeah.
you if you wanted to do it about the Dyatlov Pass incident.
Yeah.
And you told me you didn't know what the Dyatlov Pass,
yes.
what happened there. So,
same.
I thought, yeah,
yeah.
The same
with
Somerton.
Shoko Asahara.
Oh, yeah, with Shoko Asahara as well.
Which I did by myself.
Yeah. So, to begin, the Dyatlov Pass is a mountain in the northern Ural region of Russia. Well, the Ural Mountains is a big mountain chain. Before this incident, the local Mansi people called this mountain Kolat Syakul, or Dead Mountain.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Mansi people are just the indigenous people living there. This
in
name, the Mansi.
Russia.
Yeah.
Oh.
There are indigenous people.
I did not.
Those people aren't Russian. I mean, they're sort of Russian, but they're called the
yeah.
Mansi.
Oh, okay. I had no clue.
It's like in Australia.
Yeah.
There are still Aborigines.
Yeah.
But they're not Australian. They are Australian,
yeah,
but they're not Australian. That's
I get it,
a bit
I get
of gray zone. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We're talking about the incident that happened on February 2nd, 1959.
Oh, 1959. I was
going to
say 60s first.
Oh, yeah, you was going to say 60s first. Yeah, yeah, that's what they
but
all
then
say.
I thought, like, that's way too long ago, but apparently not.
Apparently
okay.
not. Apparently
well,
not.
Well, then,
so,
should have stayed with my first
yeah,
choice.
Yeah, always stick with your first choice. So, a group of 10 people who went to the Ural Pilotechnical Institute, that's a school university, they planned a skiing expedition across the northern Urals. So, skiing, snow, it's a cold place, Russia.
Mm-hmm.
The group consisted of 8 men and 2 women, and they were all experienced hikers and skiers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They were all grade 2 hikers, and they would receive their grade 3 certification upon completion of this trip. So it's a sort of a course,
yeah.
The fact that they did a lot of skiing and hiking trips got them that grade 2 certification. If they did more, kept on doing more, they would receive a grade 3 certification.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. At that time, this was the highest certification you could receive in the Soviet Union. Well, it being 1959,
yeah.
that wasn't part of Russia, it was still the Soviet
yeah,
Union.
Yeah.
So candidates had to traverse 300 kilometers, so this group had a lot of hiking and skiing experience.
Mm-hmm.
The group was led by Igor Dyatlov. He is a 20-year-old radio engineering student at that university.
How old?
23.
23? Oh.
23.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
He made the portable radio that was used on the expedition.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was apparently a big feat because it was 1959. Radios weren't that common or that good as they are today.
Yeah, common, yes, but good, that's good. A different
story. That's
strong.
So it was a huge feat. The others in the group were Yuri Doroshenko, a 21-year-old radio engineering student. He was famous at the school's hiking club for having run at a giant bear with a geologist's hammer on a camping trip. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
He fought a bear?
Yeah, he fought a bear. He didn't fight a bear, he scared off a bear.
I mean, same thing. See, that's incredible.
It's just...
Whoa.
It's one crazy 20-year-old Russian.
Damn, man.
You also, Lyudmila Dubinina. There are gonna be a lot of Russian names, and I'm gonna butcher every single one of them. And all these names, I typed them down multiple times. So we're gonna be here for a long time.
That's okay. Okay. That's okay.
So she was a 20-year-old engineering and economics major. Alexander Kolivatov, he's a 24-year-old physics major who specialized in nuclear physics.
Mm-hmm.
So a very smart man. Zinaida Kolmogorova, a 22-year-old radio engineering student. Georgi Kirivonishenko,
wow,
a 23-year-old engineer and close friend of Tyatlov, of Igor.
Sorry, I'm just extremely surprised that you said that so well in one try.
Yeah, it's because the name is going to come back quite a few times.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Rustem Slobodin, he's a 23-year-old worker at Enterprise P.O. Box 10. Enterprise P.O. Box 10, it's probably a store of some kind. I found no information about that specific thing.
I would not know either.
But, yeah, he works there. Nikolai Vladimirovich Thibault Berinol.
Okay.
Yeah. He's a 23-year-old worker in a construction department in Sverdlovsk. His name is part French, you noticed?
Nope.
It's because... No, you didn't?
Nope.
The whole Thibault Berinol...
Oh, but you didn't say it like that.
I did say it like that.
No, you did not say it so
French.
Roll
back the tapes. Well, so Thibault Berinol, his name is part French because his father is a French communist. A French communist, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you have communists in all countries.
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah. And also, second to last person who joined the trip was Semyon Zolotaryov. He's a 38-year-old veteran of World War II, and he was the instructor on the expedition.
He's a lot older.
Yeah, he's a lot older. He was sent by the school to join the group.
That's why.
Yeah. 10th member of the expedition, Yuri Yudin. He's a man you also have to remember, but he quit the expedition at the beginning of the expedition because he was sick. He was in bad health. He was supposed to wait for the group at the end of the journey. He had a... Well, I'll say more about him. So, the group gathers. They take a few trains to the town of Ivdel. The stop before that at Serov, Kirvonishenko was actually arrested for soliciting and singing out loud. Apparently that wasn't allowed in Soviet Russia. In the Soviet Union.
I think I learned about that.
Yeah. They said it wasn't decent to sing in public, so he had to spend the night in jail.
Damn, that sucks. Man.
Yeah. So, Kirvonishenko is a very joyful and happy person. He played the mandolin. Well, the mandolin that was found was actually his. Yeah, he liked to play music. He liked to sing. Idea that I'm sketching is that they are young people.
Mm-hmm.
They are very joyful people, very happy people, very athletic people.
Yeah.
They have done quite a few trips of hiking and skiing. So they are very smart, very strong, very athletic people.
Mm-hmm.
So the group takes a bus in Ivdel to Vizai. And the next day they take a trip. The next day they take a truck to a logging community called District 41. And the next day in District 41, they take a sled to take them 24 kilometers farther to north to mining settlement. So they go from city to city to settlement to a logging community to a mining station. So they have to do quite a bit of distance on a quite a few different ways to get to the beginning of their route. So once they reach the mining settlement, Yuryudin leaves the group because of his poor health.
Okay.
Yeah. He has sciatica, which is a sort of, it's an irritated nerve that runs from your lower back through to your legs to your toes.
Oh, okay.
It's a thing, I think my grandmother had that at some point. It's very painful, it produces sharp stabbing pains.
Okay.
You know, your joints, if you have to do a big hiking trip,
yeah, no.
You're not in the condition to do that.
No.
No. The rest of the group spends the night at the banks of the Lozva River. The next day they make their way to from one river to another river, the Ospia River, where they spend the night. Remember, this is in very cold temperatures. Mm-hmm. I think the temperature is minus 15.
Damn.
They are carrying a lot of equipment with them. They are carrying a huge tent with them where they all sleep in together. So it's a tent where 9 people sleep in.
That's a big tent.
Yeah, they have to survive in the wilderness at that point.
Mm-hmm.
They have to dig their tent in snow because there is a lot of snow at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a very harsh environment to go through, but these men and these women are very strong, they are very experienced, and they love doing that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There are pictures taken, though they have cameras with them, of course, they document their journey, and the pictures that I've seen are, they are very joyful, they are very happy, so it's a good trip for them.
Mm-hmm. I'm just like, I don't want to be rude to anyone or something, but
mm-hmm.
how experienced can you be in something when you're like 20 something, 23? I mean, that's still pretty young.
Yeah, that's still pretty young, but if you've been doing it since you were, let's say, 16.
Yeah, okay.
Then you have 6 years of experience.
Probably.
Yeah, and they are part of their school club.
Mm-hmm.
Their school club that does skiing and hiking. So they have someone with them who has way more experience, the veteran.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He survived World War II. I read that he was part of the Soviet Union tank division, and they had a lot of losses. It's quite miraculously that this man survived.
Oh shit, okay.
I think there was a 5% survival rate.
That's not a lot.
Yeah, I read that, could be incorrect. On January 31st, the group arrived at an edge of a highland area where they prepared for a difficult climb. They had only skied at that point, so they hadn't hiked and they hadn't climbed yet.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. They also made a cache of surplus food and equipment that they would use on the way back. So they would do a big loop and then they would return to that same point.
Okay.
Yeah, and they had the cache with the food. You leave it there. So you don't have to take too much equipment and too much weight with you if you're just going to return it the same way.
And how long was this trip planned for?
They were supposed to be gone for, I believe, 3 weeks. Oh, no.
3 weeks?
No, 2 weeks. I think it's about 2 weeks.
Damn, that's
long. Well, they were expected back February 12th.
Yeah.
Yeah, so 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Next day, the group starts to move through the pass. However, the weather conditions worsen and they are forced to make camp after losing their direction and they are deviating west. So the weather conditions are bad, storm starts picking up and they have to make shelter.
Mm-hmm.
But they are sort of off course, so it is a bit of difficulty. The area they have picked as their camp is a forested area, which offers some shelter. This, however, was the last thing that the group did.
Oh!
All members of the group died on February 2nd.
What? They were only gone for two...
Yeah, but...
Basically 3 days?
They left
February 3rd.
I haven't said when exactly they left.
January 31st, I think?
January 31st was the day that they arrived at the beginning of their climb, or specific area. They were gone for about 4 or 5 days at that point.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe a week.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's February 2nd?
Yeah.
And what was the last thing?
They set up their tent.
They set up their tent?
Yeah, they made shelter for the storm.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the last thing that they did.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
So, as I said, they were expected back February 12th. But so, obviously, they didn't show.
Yeah, no one's gonna look for them.
Yeah, there was no immediate reaction, because when Yudin left the party, Dyatlov told him that he expected them to take longer, because Dyatlov thought that the weather conditions were gonna be bad. So he said, "Don't specifically expect us on the 12th. It could be longer."
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
However, when the group still did not show, relatives of the group demanded a search party to find them.
Mm-hmm.
So the head of the institute, he sort of gathered the first rescue group that consisted of volunteer students and teachers.
Mm-hmm.
On February 26th, the search party found the group's abandoned and damaged tent.
Okay.
Damaged tent. A very strange sight, to say the least. The tent mm-hmm. was half torn down and covered in snow. There was no one in the tent, and the group's belongings were left behind.
Okay.
I'll show you a picture of the tent now.
Okay, okay. But you say...
This is what they found.
Oh, that's a really small tent for 9 people.
Yeah, but you don't see it upright.
It's definitely not
We upright. Are gonna put this photograph along with other photographs of, for example, the tent upright and the rest of the whole group together. You'll find that on our Instagram.
And website.
And our website.
Okay. Interesting, interesting. Oh, wait, another picture?
That's how the tent looked once they put it up. So you see it's damaged. I'll give you...
Okay.
And this is the group.
Oh, and this is the group, okay.
So you see they're all very young, except Simeon, who's 20 years older.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you say we now know they're dead.
I'll come to that.
Yeah, that's what you just said, but do it.
The tent.
Okay.
So you've seen the tent. I'll show you the picture of the tent upright one more time. The tent, you see it's cut.
I'm gonna have to look at it a little closer.
Take it a bit closer. So everyone who might just take the Instagram page or our website with them, it's the picture of the tent that's upright.
So it's like the upper part is like cut.
On the left side?
Yeah.
That's where the entrance is.
Yeah.
Well, you can't see the entrance, but that's just the side of it. So you see how it opened on that side?
So
that's
like,
because it's cut.
Okay, okay.
It's cut from the inside.
Okay. Oh, it's cut from the inside.
The tent is cut from the inside.
And how do you know that?
Because you can see, by the way, the fabric tears. It has been established that this tent has been cut from the inside.
Okay, okay.
Trust me.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
I trust you. I shall remember that.
9 sets of footprints were found. Some wearing a single shoe. Some mm-hmm. wearing socks. And some barefoot.
Okay.
After 500 meters of tracks, they were covered with snow. So they were clear for about 500 meters.
I mean...
Yeah.
It is 3 weeks later,
and it is in snow.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm surprised there were still footprints to begin with.
Yeah. On the forest edge, under a large tree, remains of a small fire was found alongside the bodies of Kivonishenko and Doroshenko.
Oh, okay, so 2 of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
They were both shoeless and dressed in their underwear. Let me remind you, temperatures at night are -15.
Yeah.
They had tried to climb the tree, There were branches who were found broken up to 5 meters high. Perhaps they were trying to find their campsite again.
Mm-hmm.
So the tent that was cut open.
Yeah.
Most definitely they used the branches to create the new fire. So they created,
mm-hmm.
they collected it as wood for their new fire. The Outlaw, Komogorova, and Slobodin were found 300, 480, and 630 meters away from this tree.
Okay.
So they found
mm-hmm.
5 people at this time. They died in poses suggesting they were attempting to return to the tent. So they had their bodies facing the tent,
mm-hmm.
they were trying to return.
Okay.
The other 4 members were found on May 4.
That's
a month later.
A bit more.
A bit more than a month later. 26th of February, or the 28th of February. Yeah, the 26th.
That's two months later.
Well, it being the end of February, the beginning of May, it's a month and a week.
March.
Oh, April. I forgot about
April.
Yeah, 2 months. Oh damn! I forgot about April. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh damn.
For April.
Okay, it's not March, May. It's March, April, May. Yeah, it's 2 months. They were under 4 meters of snow in a ravine or a creek 75 meters further into the woods.
Okay.
3 of the 4 were better dressed than the others. And it is thought that they took the clothes from the ones that died first. A bit like scavengers.
Well, if they're dead and you're cold, I get it, it's cruel, it's your friends, but you kind of have to think survival at that point.
Yeah, you are 100% correct. So, what do we know at this point? A group of people did a skiing expedition.
Mm-hmm.
They have not returned. Search party has been looking for them.
Mm-hmm.
They found a campsite. It's being abandoned.
Yeah.
The tent's being torn, cut open from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
They have found the bodies. They were all practically naked.
Yeah.
To be honest, they were not wearing clothes that were sufficient enough for these cold. They found some trying to build a fire. They found some trying to return to the campsite.
Yeah.
And they found some in a river.
The cause of death, is it determined that it is...
They died of hypothermia.
Yeah, okay.
But I'll come back to that in a bit.
That's all for all of them.
They all died.
Of
from
hypothermia.
They all died. Let's say that.
Obviously, they all died.
They all
yes.
died.
But, this, okay.
So, yeah.
So, they obviously ran from something. That's why they...
They might have.
Probably. In my
that's
theory.
That's a good
they
instinct,
They ran from
yeah.
something. That's why they cut open the tent from the inside, because they were panicking.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't make it to the entrance for some reason, so they cut open the tent. Maybe it was even as a decoy. They left. Some of them were too cold. They were like, I'm gonna stay here, make a fire.
Yeah.
Some went away. Maybe they died there. The others took their clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Some got further. And after a while, they were just like, it's too cold. Let's return. The threat may be gone.
Yeah.
Let's return. And they didn't make it back. Died of hypothermia or something else. That's so far my theory.
That's a good summarization. Good way of thinking about theories at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I will talk about the investigation and I will talk about theories. So,
okay.
Prepare yourself.
Okay. I'm so curious.
So, obviously, when the first 5 bodies were found, they were retrieved, and they did an autopsy on these
yeah.
bodies. There were injuries found on all 5 bodies, but none of them had caused their deaths. So Slobodin had a small crack in his skull, but that was not a fatal wound. The cause of death was determined to be hypothermia.
Mm-hmm.
The bodies found in May, however, were a different matter.
Ooh.
3 of the 4 had fatal injuries. Thibault Brinol had major skull damage, and Dubinina and Zolotaryov they had major chest fractures.
Chest fractures?
Yeah.
Specific?
To the chest.
I mean, what... Is there... is it determined what...
Blunt force trauma.
So that is a object smashing or something, right?
The force required
yeah.
to cause such damage would have been extremely high. The investigator who did the autopsy, he has said that is compared to a car crash.
Okay.
The bodies had no external wounds associated with bone fractures. This could mean that they were subjected to high levels of pressure. So if you would have been hit by a car,
mm-hmm.
your exterior skin, I mean your skin would have been broken,
mm-hmm.
your bones would have stuck out of your chest. Mm-hmm. This wasn't the case.
Okay.
So could be high levels of pressure. The four bodies were found in a creek, so they had soft tissue damage. So Dubina was missing her tongue, her eyes.
Her tongue?
Her tongue.
Huh? Her eyes.
Her eyes.
Whoa.
Part okay. of her lips, as well as some facial tissue and a fragment of her skull bone.
Wow, that's oddly specific.
Yeah. So Lotaryov had his eyeballs missing, and Kolivatov had his eyebrows missing. So they all had parts of their face missing.
These were the people that were found in
the creek. Yeah.
So that could have been fish, because there are fish who eat
that
the
could
eyeballs.
Be. It is still a body laying in water.
The tongue, that's something else. But
yeah.
the eyes, to me, the first thing I think of is
yeah.
probably, it could be fish.
The forensic expert judged that this happened after they died,
mm-hmm.
and it was due to them being in the stream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whilst all these deaths are tragic, and they are very suspicious, no real cause except hypothermia could be said. The official statement for closing this case is given as such, and I quote, "The deaths of the expedition members were due to a series of mistakes by Dyatlov. On February 1st, he began the ascent to the summit at 3 p.m., even though he knew about the difficulty of the terrain. Furthermore, and this was Dyatlov's next mistake, he chose a line 500 meters to the left of the planned pass that lies between peak 1079 and peak 880. So the group found themselves on the eastern slope of peak 1079. They used what was left of the daylight to ascend to the summit in strong winds, which are typical for this area, and low temperatures of minus 25 degrees. Dyatlov found himself in bad conditions for the night, so he decided to pitch his tent on the slope of 1079 so as to start in the morning without adding the distance from the forest, which is about a kilometer, to the remaining track of about 10 kilometers to the summit." End quote. That's the official statement. A lot of info.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can take back from this is that they put all the blame on Dyatlov.
Yeah. Basically. And Dyatlov, was he the...
He was the leader of the group.
The one who's older?
No.
No.
That's Semyon. That's the instructor.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so just, yeah, the leader.
Dyatlov
okay.
was, I believe, 23-year-old young man.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question.
You have a question, and
at this point,
yeah.
Was there any drugs found in their blood, or was that something that was tested? Then
I
think so, but
they probably tested that. I have not found anywhere that
okay.
it was conclusive that they were high or something.
Okay.
So as I said, the official statement puts all the blame on Dyatlov,
mm-hmm.
Also making his name very well known and giving the pass its name,
mm-hmm.
because to this day it's called the Dyatlov Pass
yeah.
incident.
Indeed.
Doroshenko, Komogorova, Dyatlov, Slobodin, Dubinina, Kolovator, and Thibaut Brinol, they are all buried at Mialovsku Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
Kivoneshenko is buried at Ivanovsku Cemetery. It is very strange that Kivoneshenko is buried in another cemetery than the rest of the group. His parents did object to him being buried with the rest, and this obviously is the basis of a theory that he is a double agent.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is pretty odd. I mean...
Yeah, that is pretty, pretty odd. I couldn't find...
It's not that that was his hometown or something?
No.
No.
The information that I found never really gave a really concrete answer to why he's not buried with the rest.
But just if he was like a double agent, like
KGB,
wouldn't it be like it made it, how do I say that, it was made immediately suspicious that he was buried somewhere else. So if he was a double agent who obviously even after death shouldn't be found out, shouldn't he be buried with the rest anyway? Is what
yeah.
I'm saying.
I understand what you mean.
Yeah?
You mean why not keep up the masquerade and why not keep
yeah,
up?
Basically,
yeah,
basically.
Why not make people believe that in death he was still a double agent? Why do something that obvious to single him out? I have no idea. I really wish I could answer that. I really wish so.
It's just a really weird thing.
It's a really weird thing. So there are quite a few theories on what really happened here. So were the local Mansi responsible for their death? Is the KGB responsible? Were they mistaken for Gulag fugitives? Did the Yeti kill them? Or was Ball Lightning responsible?
Who?
Ball Lightning. It's a weird phenomena.
Oh, like
lightning
yeah. balls? Oh yeah,
yeah.
That, okay.
That's
okay.
A weird natural
yeah,
phenomenon.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
And I'll just tell you a few that I found reasonable and less reasonable. So, an avalanche.
Mm-hmm.
An avalanche is one of the most plausible theories. It is also the current official cause of death. An avalanche.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, computer simulation and analysis also suggest that it was an avalanche. It has been supported by a model used by a team of physicists and engineers that was done this year. So they are still working on this case today.
Damn.
I mean, not today, this year at least.
Yeah. Damn, that's crazy.
Here is the statement from the Prosecutor General's office. And I quote, "The most appealing aspect of Kuryokov's scenario is that the Dyatlov Pass actions no longer seem irrational. The snow slab, according to Green, would probably have made loud cracks and rumbles as it fell across the tent, making an avalanche seem imminent. Kuryakov noted that although the skiers made an error in the placement of their tent, everything they did substantially was textbook. They conducted an emergency evacuation to ground that would be safe from an avalanche. They took shelter in the woods, they started the fire, they dug a snow cave. Had they been less experienced, they might have remained near the tent, dug it out, and survived. But avalanches are by far the biggest risk in the mountains in winter, and the more experience you have, the more you fear them. The skiers' experience doomed them." End quote. Kuryakov is the man in charge of the simulation. The prosecutor general, he's just saying that if the simulation is that it's an avalanche, the way they have set up their tent and the way that the avalanche probably did happen, the most logical thing was that the group fled the tent. They did what you do in an avalanche, so their actions are completely rational.
Yeah.
They went lower ground. They went to a forested area, they tried to make fire there. He also said that if they did not know this, if they weren't that experienced, they would have probably stayed closer to the tent, which would have caused them to be able to dig out the tent and survive. So the fact that they were so knowledged about avalanches
mm-hmm.
made them run that far away, because they were that far away, they couldn't reach the tent anymore.
But that's so weird. Like, why? Like, they were so experienced. They knew what to do.
Yeah.
Yet what they did was wrong.
No. What they did wasn't wrong in the case of an avalanche. It's just, you have to remember, minus 25. They ran away. So, they probably, the avalanche started and the entrance of their tent was probably dug in.
Yeah.
That's why they cut their way out. They didn't take any clothes with them.
No time for that. Okay.
It's just what they did was correct, but doing the correct thing does not always mean that you'll survive.
Yeah, okay.
It's like, if you fought a grizzly bear, a brown bear, the thing they say is, always play dead. That works 9 of the 10 times.
Yeah.
If you play dead, the bear would leave you alone. Not always.
Not always, no, no. But, and I'm just a little confused as to why would they have survived if they stayed with the tent? Because if it
first
was an avalanche...
Yeah, they placed their tent incorrectly. That's a major fault, a major mistake that they did.
It's
apparently,
true, yeah, really
the
weird.
Way they... So you can't just put your tent on snow. You have to dig your tent in. Because of the snow and because of... I'm not an expert on that part. I just saw a picture of it and it made sense.
Sure.
So, if they would have not placed their tent at that location, if they would have put it closer to forests, or if they put their tent closer to forests, if they would have left their tent in an avalanche, go to the woods, and then be closer to their tent.
Yeah.
If they then returned to that tent, they could have just dug it out, set it back up, get warm, probably survive.
Okay, yeah.
But that's not what happened.
Okay, yeah.
They were farther away, but the way they handled was correct.
Yeah, okay, now, yeah, I get it. But it's just weird, why would they make such a mistake as putting your tent wrong, in a wrong position?
Because they were already... I mean, I don't know.
It's just
we'll
so
probably
weird.
Never know. Yeah, it's a weird thing. It could just be human error.
Yeah, and especially because you say the first few people were found 400 meters from the tent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 400 meters is not that much to return with your tent just to be safe.
Yeah, but 400 meters and -25.
Okay, but to be safe.
Yeah, but naked. In -25?
No, that's not what I'm saying. Like,
yeah?
If you say, like, they got their tent and they were already too far from the forest to return with the tent to set it up there, and they were just like, you know what, screw it, we're just gonna put our tent here.
Yeah?
That's what I'm saying. Like, they could have just returned 400 meters back to the forest to set up their tent there in the first place and avoid the whole thing.
Yeah, but they were already off course.
Yeah.
And, like the prosecutor general says, they'll put another extra mileage on their... I mean, you have to do the distance. Obviously, hindsight is 20/20. Why did they do it?
Yeah.
They didn't. They just didn't do it.
No.
And, it cost them their life.
Damn, that's crazy.
Yeah. There is, however, contradictory evidence.
Oh.
So here is what gets exciting. Here is what gets interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Avalanches create debris. So the snow traveling down a mountain, it picks up rocks, it picks up trees, it picks up debris from the ground, tufts of bush, of grass. Investigators always look for the pattern that avalanches create, because the debris is carried out, but it's by a certain logic. This was not the case. There was no debris as you would with an avalanche.
So there was basically no evidence that there was an avalanche.
At that point, no.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Over 100 expeditions have been done since the incident, and none have reported any conditions that would create avalanches.
Okay.
Tjautlov was an experienced skier.
Mm-hmm.
And Zolotaryov studied for his master's certificate in ski instruction. In ski instructions, neither man would have allowed the camp to be in a path of a potential avalanche.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The footprints leaving the tent were consistent with people walking at a normal pace, not people running away in panic.
Okay, that's indeed very interesting.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I don't think you can determine.
Yeah, by the way you walk.
Yeah, I mean,
the distance that your feet travel.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, if you were running, you would have not taken that many steps. Your steps would be longer.
Yeah, of course.
If you just walk, it's closer distance.
I would have never thought of that, but now that you say it like that, it sounds so logical.
Another plausible theory could have been that the group had experienced a katabatic wind. Katabatic winds are somewhat rare, but they are very violent winds.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So in 1978, at the Anaris Mountain in Sweden, 8 hikers were killed and 1 was severely injured due to a katabatic wind.
Okay.
I'm not gonna explain what exactly katabatic wind is. It's just a very... It's something to do with the heat of the wind that flows over the cold plain makes it very violent and very strong.
And very, like, harsh, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Very harsh, strong wind.
Okay, yeah.
The topography of both of these locations is very similar. The difference with a quote-unquote normal storm is that the storm gradually builds. And you have some, if you can hear the storm coming, you can gradually dress, dismantle your tent, you can find shelter in a different way. So you have time to think. Katabatic winds are very sudden, and in those cases, you're supposed to bury your tent in snow, so the winds won't tear it to pieces.
Okay.
So you don't have time to disassemble your tent, you're supposed to just pile snow on top of your tent, and then the leave, find a better shelter.
Okay, so that's... However, something's been bothering me.
Yeah?
You have a picture of the tent cut open. When was that picture taken?
You mean when it's upright?
Yeah.
The picture with the tent upright was once they retrieved the tent back, they took it for investigation.
The people who were searching for these...
Yeah, the
people.
Investigators and the search party, when they found the tent,
they
collected everything.
Yeah. So when was the picture taken from the tent that was collapsed with snow?
You mean
on top of it?
This picture?
Yeah.
This one? I'm not sure when that was taken. It's probably been taken when they found the tent. That's probably not exactly the moment they found the tent. Probably the day of they found the tent.
So... The tent has been upright for 2 months.
No.
No, wait, they found them
it's
sooner.
It's about 3 weeks after.
Yeah,
yeah,
3 weeks.
Yeah.
They take a picture for evidence.
Yeah.
And what, a day, 2 days later, there's snow on the tent.
What do you mean?
That's weird.
No,
or
what do you mean too? So...
Yeah, so, okay, wait.
Yeah, okay, I'm not understanding what you're saying.
So... They're looking for these people, and this is what they found.
No, that's not what they found.
Ah, that's my
question. That's the tent they found. But that's back at the police station, where they're investigating the tent.
Yeah?
So they found the tent like this.
Okay.
They cleared it off. They took it with them.
And they set it back.
To figure out what happened with this tent.
Ah, and they set it back up.
They set it back up.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I was
That's
lost
why it's
there.
So wide and it's open.
I was lost.
Yeah,
there.
They
okay.
didn't find the tent
open
like
that.
They found it collapsed like that.
Oh.
But if you look at that picture, so I'm for the listeners who want to take the pictures with you on Instagram or on our site, it's the picture with the two men on the left side and with the collapsed tent. If you look at that, it looks like there is... snow just piled on top of the tent.
Mm-hmm.
So it just looks collapsed, but what I told you about katabatic winds and you're supposed to pile snow on top, it looks like that.
Yeah.
What you also see is a tiny little cross there.
Yeah,
I saw
that.
That's a flashlight.
A flashlight.
Yeah, not a flashlight, but a flashlight.
Yeah, I was like, a flashlight. But why
that could be the case. I mean, it's just a cross, it's probably just a walk and a key stick or something. What the theory about that is that they probably left the tent, but one of the group put a stake on the ground with the flashlight on top of it. So once the storm ended or the katabatic winds, whatever could be the case, they could find their tent back.
Mm-hmm.
If they were turned around, they just had to find the light and then they knew where the tent was.
Yeah.
So that could be the case.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably why that's there.
Okay.
There's also a theory that the local Mansi population had killed the group because they had entered their local sacred hunting ground and might have caused an altercation, a verbal altercation, a physical altercation.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is no special prohibition to hike the mountain. Everyone goes to the mountain, Russian men and women, Mansi. Also, the hiker's property was also left undisturbed. So it probably was the Mansi. Another theory suggests that the hikers had eaten fly agaric, which after ingestion causes delirium and acute sweating. Fly agaric is a fungus.
Okay, but they would have found that
in the stomach, maybe they didn't do an autopsy of the stomach. I'm not sure.
That would be so dumb.
So it causes delirium. It causes acute sweating. The hikers could have left the tent in bizarre behavior, taken off their clothes.
That's why I asked first would have about the drugs, yeah. But that's
which would have
like
caused
the
them to freeze in snow.
Exactly. I mean, I also feel like they are experienced enough to not just do drugs or take something like that or eat something that they don't know.
Yeah.
Because we all know if you are intoxicated with something,
yeah,
that you are at high risk of hypothermia.
Yeah, that's correct. I've actually, if you go out and you start drinking the whole night,
yeah,
I have felt that.
Oh, really?
You're in the cold. You know it's cold outside. It's close to minus temperatures, and I just go outside to just cool off. But you know it's cold, but your body is warm by, of course, the alcohol you consume.
So I just feel like that's not something they would do.
No, it feels a little bit far-fetched.
Yeah, especially because they were. If you would have said it was your first time hiking, I mean, anything could have happened. If they were experienced.
Yeah.
It would be really weird if they did something like that.
So, I'll show you a picture now. Mm-hmm. So, it's also a pictorial link. It's the last picture on the camera of Thibaut Brignol. Oh. Tell the listeners, describe what you see.
Yeah, first of all, lots of snow, but there's a man in a black hood or something. Black mask. Yeah, he's clearly... I mean, it looks like he's following them or something. That's what it looks like.
Yeah. This picture, and obviously the fact that it's the last in the camera...
Mm-hmm.
Gives air to a theory that they were killed by a Yeti.
That does not look like a Yeti, though, but...
I also don't think it looks like a Yeti.
I mean, it's literally a man. But
you could see it's just a human silhouette.
Mm-hmm.
It's dark. It's the same color. I understand how some people would think that it's a man-ape, a Yeti, that's following them.
Oh.
Like Bigfoot.
Yeah, okay, yeah, but wait... Okay, yeah, if I look at it like that, you could kind of think it's like a gorilla, but that's standing very upright, or how do you say that?
Yeah.
But when I saw it from the angle, it clearly looked like his jacket, or what should be his jacket, is lighter than his trousers.
Yeah,
you can
yeah.
see a clear difference.
That's correct.
But when you look at the picture up front, it doesn't look so different. The colors. It's a black and white picture, but
I just see a man returning from probably taking a piss. That's probably one of the seven men that
maybe
were on the trip.
Maybe, yeah.
Probably. I mean, in my opinion.
I mean, that's the thing with these old cameras. There was no. I mean, very old cameras. There was no timestamp.
Oh, yeah. No,
you couldn't figure out when
this picture was taken.
I mean, this could have been before everything went down.
Yeah. That's what happened at the Outlaw Pass. What do you think about it?
That's
what happened.
There's nothing more?
I wanted to leave the episode off with just your opinion. What do you think about this mystery now?
Okay, well...
So, obviously, we know they died.
Yep.
We know the journey they took. We know where they died. what you think happened.
What I think is, it sounds also logical that it was some type of storm,
yeah,
like a weather disaster.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are two things to me that don't add up. And that's, first of all, if it was a weather disaster,
mm-hmm,
how could it take them? What are we now, 60 years later?
Yeah.
How could it take them 60 years to determine? I mean, not even finding it.
Yeah.
Like, what it is.
It was.
You.
Yeah.
Especially,
ahead.
Like, I don't know how times were back then, but now you can find back when, where there were tornadoes, even when there was no one around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's
evidence showing that there has been,
yeah,
natural disasters.
Instruments.
Yeah. There were instruments, devices
that can measure the types of weather even in the past. So I don't know if they can go back 60 years. Like, what happened?
I don't really know what you're talking about now. A device that measures weather in the past?
Oh my god. How do I explain this?
I mean, like satellites taking pictures of, and then you go back and look at the older pictures to determine how the weather patterns are?
I mean, I guess something like that.
Or
I'm not an expert, obviously. But, I mean, I know I heard about, you can go back and be like, oh, like last week apparently there was a tornado somewhere. No one knew because there wasn't anyone there.
Oh, yeah.
But we can determine that.
Probably because of satellites and stuff.
Maybe, yeah. Some type of technology. So I don't know if they can go back 60 years, but
I don't think so.
I feel like there could be something to determine.
What you're not thinking about at this point is that we are talking about the Soviet Union. There were no murders in the Soviet Union.
Yeah, okay.
No rapes in the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Everything was good in the Soviet Union.
Okay, yeah, I understand.
There is a certain degree of secrecy
about
this point.
I mean, yeah, sure. But I'm just not thinking about that for a second. There was a second thing that was odd to me, and that was the tongue and the lips that were missing. Like, eyeballs could be fish. An entire tongue? Maybe, I don't know.
Could just be a body lying in water, bloats, and
mm-hmm,
these are the first things. Those are, like, the lips. They are the exterior of your face, the
mm-hmm,
nose, the eyebrows.
Mm, okay.
Those are gonna deteriorate quicker than your brain, perhaps.
Okay, well, in that case,
it could just be, I mean, I'm not an expert on dead bodies, and I'm certainly not an expert on dead bodies lying in water for X amount of time. That could just be natural.
Okay. Well, then I think that this most likely is a natural disaster.
An avalanche.
Very sadly. Or the wind.
Yeah, the wind, yeah.
Seems like a little bit more plausible. But indeed, you do mention it's Soviet Russia,
mm-hmm,
back then. I don't know. From all your research, it didn't feel like they were people who were hiding something or trying to accomplish something that would go against Soviet standards or something.
Yeah.
So, I don't know why it would be, how do you say it, like a hit thing,
like
or
the KGB.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing about Semyon being with them, the 38-year-old veteran. All these theories center around him because
mm-hmm,
he's the odd man out. He
mm-hmm
has military experience. He could be a KGB agent,
mm-hmm,
but...
And there's the one guy who wasn't...
Who didn't go with
them,
Yudi Yudin.
Who wasn't buried with the rest.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, that...
Yeah, that's correct.
Like, for me, from my point of view, I don't see why it would be secret agent stuff. But again,
the KGB is a secret police.
It's
so,
Soviet Russia.
Yeah, and I just think it's so weird for the KGB or this to be a hit or an assassination
mm-hmm
by one of the group. Because why train someone to assassinate a group of people if they will die, if there is possibility for them to die as well?
Yeah, it kind of lacks motive to me.
Yeah, something why would you just try to kill 8 university students?
So, what of course could also be the case, maybe a little far-fetched, I don't know.
Aliens?
No. No.
Could be. It's one of the theories is it could be aliens.
No.
Because there were strange lights spotted by a different group not that far away from them.
Could have been an airplane.
Yeah. Could have been a weather balloon.
No, but what I was...
What's your far-fetched thing?
What I was thinking is that maybe it was secret agents stuff.
Yeah.
And then they tried to make it look like it was the storm.
Yeah.
But again, what was the motive?
Yeah.
Obviously.
What were you gain by killing these students?
So there must have been something, right? If that is the case, let's just assume that is the case, that happened. Why? We don't need a how, we need a why, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
I don't know either.
I don't know either why we just kill these young men and these
maybe
young women.
Maybe they were involved in something that is not documented anywhere. I mean, it's 1959.
Yeah.
Secret societies. How
I
much
think,
is there that we never know about that is never documented?
Yeah, I think we'll probably never know really what happened.
Probably not.
The theory of it being an avalanche is, I mean, Occam's razor. You know the principle of Occam's razor?
Mm.
Occam's razor is a principle that dictates the most logical explanation is probably the explanation.
Yeah, okay.
So the most logical explanation in this situation is it's an avalanche, so it'll probably be an avalanche.
Probably.
Like, someone tells you a story, and they tell you that they have been kidnapped by aliens. What's the most logical explanation? They are really kidnapped by aliens, or they were just drunk? They are known to be a heavy drinker, so they could have just been drunk. The logical explanation would have been that it's probably because they were drunk.
Yeah, probably.
So that's what Occam's razor dictates.
Okay, that's that. Yeah? It's weird. What it could also be, maybe, is that it actually was just an avalanche and it was just a tragic accident.
Probably is.
But because it happened in Soviet Russia,
yeah,
people from the outside were like, nah, couldn't have been just an accident. It must have been something else. It's the Russians.
Because it is in Russia that people not in Russia, I mean in the Soviet Union, put more weight and levity to the tale. Well, it could be.
That could have been the case as well.
Yeah, it could be. So, anyway, that was the Dyatlov Pass incident.
Very sad.
It's a
I hope
sad
these
story.
People rest in peace.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I hope so as well.
Very tragic.
So, the site that I used is called dyatlovpass.com. Pretty easy to remember, but it's a very good site. It has a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
It has information about the group themselves, every single individual.
Okay.
It talks about the search effort, the autopsies, the deaths of the group, different pictures, because a lot of them had cameras with them, but also pictures of the searchers, their diaries.
That's a lot of information.
That's a lot of information. Plus, it has a lot of different theories as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So, if anyone wants to know more about the Dyatlov Pass incident in more detail, I mean...
A lot more detail.
A lot more detail.
Damn.
This is really your place to go.
Okay. And what was the website?
Dyatlovpass.com.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
So... I think we can leave it at that.
Yeah.
But we forgot last episode.
We did.
Yeah, we did.
And I think the episode before that as well, actually.
We were supposed to... I mean, we told ourselves that we're going to recommend a podcast to listen to at the end of each episode, and we only did it once.
Yup.
Oops. So... let's just do it again now.
Yeah. What do you recommend, Lawrence?
I recommend a podcast that has one of our closest friends mm-hmm. in the cast of it. It's a Vampire the Masquerade actual play podcast. It's called Sea Shanties by Night.
Yeah.
So it's vampires and pirates. Vampire pirates.
Or pirate vampires.
Or pirate vampires. Or maybe just regular pirates plus some vampires.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's an actual play Vampire the Masquerade. Sea Shanties by Night. It has Lady Dark Scarlet. It has Steffi Devon. It has Syrinx. Syrinx, our friend Syrinx. It has the Queen V, the different podcast I listen to. She's also part of it. And it also has the Lord by Night podcast guy. So if anyone is interested in an actual play, this is really good because the Lord by Night guy, mm-hmm. I listened, he also has a different podcast called Lord by Night. Lord by Night, which explains everything about different vampire clans, talks about different, but it's not. It's really good. It's really well made.
Mm-hmm. It sounds very interesting. It's really, really well made.
So I really suggest that you listen to it because we're both really big into Vampire the Masquerade.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. It's on my list. Sea Shanties by Night is definitely on my list. And
well,
I just haven't got to it.
Put Lore by Night on that list as well.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so Sea Shanties by Night, you can find them. I mean, you can find all the different cast members under different social medias and Instagrams and Twitters.
Mm-hmm.
But I suggest just look up Sea Shanties by Night on Spotify, listen to the first episode, and we'll find our information on the episodes mm-hmm. as well. So?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Sounds absolutely great.
Yeah.
Cut that out. That was Chris
absolutely great. All right. So then that just leaves me at thanking our dear listeners for listening.
And thank you, Lawrence, for presenting the entire case.
It was my pleasure. And thank you, guys. Thank you for listening.
Where can the listeners find us, Lawrence?
Oh, yeah. Almost forgot. We talked about a different podcast, we didn't talk about our own. You can always find us at Linktree, They Come Before Dawn. It has all our socials, our Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, our YouTube, our website. You can all find it there.
Mm-hmm.
Our email address, Gmail.
Yeah. If you want to send us something.
Yeah.
Something.
I would suggest everyone to leave us a review. At where you can leave us a review. 5 stars, whatever the hell.
Give us a thumbs up on YouTube.
Thumbs up at YouTube. Yep. And we'll just tell you guys to thank you all for listening.
Indeed. Thank you.
Thank you. And I hope you have a great night.
See you in the next one.
Bye.
Next time on They Come Before Dawn.
Over the ages, rumors of pale female ghosts have been heard. They weep for love lost, they weep for death, and they weep for tragedy. Sometimes they even harm the innocent. Next time, we will be talking about the weeping women.